But leading off today's program, Bill Resnick interviews Mark Dudzik, who has served as a national organizer of the Labor Party and is currently the national coordinator for the Labor Campaign for Single-Payer Health Care. Bill?
Thanks, Tom. Mark Dudzik, welcome to KABU.
Bill, it's great to be here.
Mark Dudzik, again, national coordinator of Labor for Single-Payer Health Care. Some time ago, he was a national organizer for the Labor Party, and he's written a lot. He got involved in politics some years ago as president of his New Jersey local of the Oil, Chemical, and Atomic Workers Union, one of the great honorable unions in the United States and still in struggle. So, Mark, many on the left, the failure of Trump Care, at least the apparent failure of Trump Care, they're trying to reorganize and win a House majority. It was hailed, though, as a great opportunity to promote and win single payer, at least build great support for it. Certainly Bernie Sanders strongly campaigned for a single payer system, why it's so necessary. And that energized millions of people who recognize the need for it. Polls indicate that a growing majority of people are in favor of single payer. On the other side, of course, there's the insurance companies and that whole apparatus of wealth who will spend unlimited amounts of money to stop a single-payer system. The question then becomes how to win it. We're going to be talking about that later in the interview. But, Mark, first tell us about single-payer, the virtues of a single-payer system or Medicare for all.
Sure, Bill. From my perspective, nothing would do more to make life more secure for working-class Americans than to create a Medicare-for-all system which would treat health care as a birthright for everybody in America. It's the only industrialized country that doesn't treat health care as a right, and it just causes, you know, incredible stress in so many families in America. Even those who have health care, you know, are worried about the prospects of losing their health care or the prospects of not being able to pay for procedures, even though they have some coverage because of huge and growing deductibles and access to doctors. It's this crazy system which is built not to deliver health care, but to deliver profit for the medical industrial complex. And so, you know, we think that this is really a wedge issue that can really open up a whole broader debate and discussion about what the economy and society would look like if it was organized to benefit working class people rather than just the 1% that run things today. For unions, which is my constituency and the work that we do in the labor campaign, you know, the fights over health care benefits are the biggest cause of strikes and lockouts and concession bargaining. And it's a huge, huge issue. And if we could take health care off the bargaining table, we could really achieve so much more for union members in America. And in addition, we believe that by talking about health care as a public good and talking about making it a right kind of puts the union movement back at the center of working class issues and concerns, and rather than being seen as a interest group that's just fighting for the narrow health care benefits of its own members, we would be fighting for health care for the entire working class. It would help transform labor.
The other side, of course, says, oh, what are you complaining about? The American health care system is the best in the world. It provides the best care. And they, of course, frighten people by talk about long lines and all the rest of it that occur in Canada and other and the whole rest of the long lines for elective procedures. What do you make of those arguments? They're absolutely bogus, but they just keep saying it. Tell us the real story.
You know, look, I mean, number one, as you know, we spend twice as much as any other industrialized country for a system that has poorer outcomes up and down the line. But, you know, look, there's some truth to it. If you are a rich guy who needs a heart transplant, America is a pretty good place to get your health care. You know, however, if you are, you know, an African-American woman in Baltimore with diabetes, it's a horrible place, and you'd be better off in a country like Cuba than you would be in the U.S. in terms of getting access to health care. So, you know, health care is a mirror on the broad inequalities that, you know, our society generates, and it resonates up and down the system. And then, you know, I can only laugh when people talk about lines because That's most people's experience today with our health care system, is rationing up and down, applying to some phone 800 number somewhere to get permission to access health care, and then having to jump through all kinds of gatekeepers and stuff to actually get the treatment. So most people do not have a seamless experience with health care today under our system, and we could do so much more with the resources that we have.
Yeah, and there are so many better systems of health care that could be incorporated. One thing that I think that a single-payer system could do is not only create a whole lot faster and better care for people, but really democratize the system for the people who work in it and for people who come to it. It seems to me, especially with chronic care, that hospitals, in fact, some are trying to do it and many of them are not, but that are trying to change the way that they work with people so that, in fact, people have far more knowledge and interest and support in keeping themselves healthy, which and keeping the family healthy, which is, it seems to me, it's quite fundamental and is not going on now in the United States. It's healthcare for profit only.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Bill. I mean, we have a system that looks at healthcare as a profit center rather than as a public service. And it's very frustrating for the people who work within that system, which is why groups like nurses are the biggest advocates for a single-payer system, because their mission is to provide health care to people, and they're so frustrated by the way the system is organized. So, you know, a single-payer would give an opportunity to rationally reorganize the health care system around human values. It doesn't solve all the problems up front, but because it's publicly administered and publicly planned, you can begin to develop a coherent plan to move forward. And we can also redeploy the hundreds of thousands of workers who are doing wasteful work under the current system and redeploy them to more useful activities and delivering real health care to people. You know, every doctor in America has at least one employee whose only job it is to argue with insurance companies about getting reimbursed for the procedures. And then, of course, every insurance company has a similar employee whose job it is to argue with that person. You know, if those folks were retrained to do community outreach and to do preventive care and healthcare education, you know, we could have a much more rational and effective system. Inside the system would feel so much better about the work that they do.
And learn a lot and become real citizens rather than shills for one of these profit-making entities. This is KBU Radio in Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick here for The Old Mole, talking to Mark Dudzik, who's the National Coordinator for Labor for Single-Payer Healthcare. Mark, let's talk about the politics of it. It's very clear that the healthcare system is terribly broke and that there are really quite wonderful ways of reorganizing it that are, in fact, characteristic of some clinics and in some state systems. There are some really good healthcare models out there that work. But the politics of it seems to me to be extremely difficult. Like the military, which is such a huge part of our economy, the system itself as it exists now has its own cheering section of shareholders and all the rest of it, this huge apparatus now that's grown up to make profits, but not really to provide health, at least not as good outcomes as countries that spend half the wealth. They're trying to revive Trump care again. What do you make of that fight now in Washington? Trump is not going to give up on this, and he's very vengeful. He's going to keep gnawing at it forever, wanting to win that battle, regardless of how ridiculous and hideous the plan is, Ryan's plan.
Yeah, well, I think there's powerful forces driving those changes that Trump and Ryan are trying to achieve. And, you know, I think that particularly from the wing of the Republican Party that Ryan represents, they see an historic opportunity to roll back what they call entitlement programs, what we call social insurance programs. You know, they see Medicaid as the most vulnerable of those programs, and they're going to keep trying to push to attack those programs and turn more and more of the healthcare market over to the for-profit insurance and healthcare delivery system. So that dynamic is going to definitely continue to play out, whether it plays out in these big reform efforts like Trump care or in the sort of death by a thousand cuts approach. You know, we're going to continue to fight these issues out. But, you know, we say that we have to fight for more than just preserving the status quo, because the status quo does a really lousy job right now, even under the best of circumstances, for delivering health care to Americans. And the programs that have been designed to try to deliver health care to Americans are all based on the flawed conception that health care ought to be treated as a commodity rather than a public good. So our vision is to keep moving forward until we win Medicare for all for everybody in America. And that's really something that's supported by the overwhelming majority of the American people. And it's something that doesn't, you know, it's not a question of developing good policy proposals at this point in time. People know how Medicare works and, you know, how it could be improved and how it could be expanded to everybody in America. It's a pretty clear-cut idea, not all that complex. So the real challenge is not the policy proposals. The challenge is confronting power. And as you said, the medical industrial complex is huge. It's the biggest and most powerful set of institutions in the history of capitalism. And to overturn that, we need a big, broad fight against corporate power, which is why institutions like the labor movement have to be at the center of this fight for health care justice, because labor is constructed to fight corporate power. We need to be oriented in that fight. So the real problem is how to build a movement against the power that sits at the center of the health care industry and stands between the American people and their health care.
You know, one of the problems, though, in the certainly in the short run, and in fact, in the long run, we all die, so I think we have to be thinking about the short run. In the short run, the U.S. Congress now is controlled by the various predatory industries, the military industry, the mm-hmm. parts of the agriculture, agribusiness, and the healthcare industrial complex. They're big enough and active enough and smart enough, those groups, and have lobbyists who are smart enough and huge apparatuses and machinery. It's going to be bottled up, it seems to me, at the federal level for quite a while, no matter what we do. But it is very possible that we could win state-level experiments that then could begin moving across the country and finally eventuate in a national system. Is that how people are thinking first, and what do you see happening at the state level?
That's certainly how we're thinking. We sort of have a three-point program for how to win this. You know, number one, we got to change the terms of debate nationally around healthcare, not just circling the wagons, but fighting for Medicare for all and building a broad consensus that this is the solution to the healthcare problem. And we have a really good example in that with the Social Security fights that have taken place over the last 10 years or so. You may recall that it's one of the lower points in the Obama administration. He indicated that he may be willing to do business with the Republican majorities in Congress and concede to some limitations and cutbacks on Social Security as part of what he was calling a grand bargain. Some advocates in that world, led by a group called Social Security Works, kind of flipped that debate and started demanding that we don't cut Social Security, but expand it and improve the benefits for everybody in America. And they turned that debate around. And we need to do the same thing around the healthcare debate, develop a broad public consensus around what a good healthcare system would look like and begin to build political support. Second, we got to get breakthroughs at the state level because the national politics is just frozen. There's no conceivable path forward nationally over the next 2 to 4 years at least. So we got to win some breakthroughs at the state level that show that we can achieve and build a better system that costs less and provides more healthcare. And we think we can do that. There's a number of very strong state-level movements. We're looking particularly at places like California and New York, where there's strong bills being considered right now. We think the whole West Coast, from Washington down into Nevada, is ripe for some real state-level initiatives just because of the politics that have developed on the West Coast. And some of the northeastern states are also open to that. So we're really looking to make some breakthroughs at the state level. We think that that can happen. You cannot build a pure single-payer system at a state level, but you could create a publicly administered universal health plan at state levels that would really work. And then finally, then we come back to the national. From those victories at the state level, we move back to a national movement, and we build the healthcare movement nationally as part of a much broader movement to reclaim the public good in a number of areas like education and job planning and environmental issues. You know, we've got to oppose, be part of this movement against the privatization and commodification of, you know, all of the indicators of qualities of life for working class people. And I think we can do that based on the victories that we win at the state level.
That raises a couple of questions. This is KBOO Radio. Bill Resnick here talking to Mark Dudzik, who's a national coordinator of Labor for Single Payer, which is a very important for the left national movement to bring Medicare for All. Medicare for All is such a great way of talking about a universal health care system because people know how well Medicare works. The elderly are devoted to Medicare, and families, very few, don't have a few elderly people who get good medical care or reasonable care now on it. Mark, we were talking about state systems and possibilities at the state level, and you said that it could not be a full system as we'd want. It appears over the last couple of years, one of the ways the states have tried to build that system, and sometimes often coming up short, like in Vermont or Colorado, where the industry and some of the Democratic Party politicians managed to destroy it, like in Vermont, that was very close. And during the Obama administration, the Health and Human Services Department allowed waivers for those states so they could convert a lot of the money they're now spending into a universal system. But it would require a lot of waivers. Is that, am I wrong about that? Or could it be actually be set up without having to get the Trump administration to support the experiments?
It would require some waivers under the Affordable Care Act, because you have to replace these state private insurance exchanges with a public insurance system. That section of the ACA is still in legal force, but we would have to apply for waivers to the federal government in order to implement a state program. So there's a political calculation there. And then there's just some complexities about integrating all of the federal monies that flow into the healthcare system into a public fund from Medicaid and Medicare and the Children's Health Insurance Program and public preventive primary care clinics and a number of other sources, veterans health care, into a rational system that would require some innovative techniques to do so. And there's a lot of thinking about how to do that in the most efficient way. But obviously the cleanest way to do it would be to have one national Medicare for All plan and just do that transition nationally. But the political way forward is going to run through the states, we do believe.
Ultimately, it seems to me that it depends on winning enormous amounts of public support for Medicare for All, such that the informed support, recognizing the falsity of the claims of the medical profiteering complex, and able to explain that to the neighbors. Right now, we're in that, it seems to me, we have to be in a process of educating people and gaining those commitments. I'm sure you agree. Tell us how it's done.
We in the labor movement call that inoculation. When you're organizing workers to join a union, you know that as soon as you go public, the employer is going to do all kinds of things to discourage people from uniting into a union and spread all kinds of lies and fear and misinformation and division. And so we've learned over the years that the only way to counter that is to prepare people for it in advance and let them know what is coming and how to respond to those arguments. We think we really have to do that even more so on this healthcare fight so that your people are prepared when they tell people that this is going to be the biggest tax increase in human history and that they'll never ever be able to see their family doctor again and all of these things that we know is coming. People got to be prepared to understand those arguments and to speak to their neighbors about them. So we really need to be ready. I think where single-payer movements at the state level have floundered is when they've gotten overconfident and have not realized how desperate the medical industrial complex will fight to prevent, even in a small state like Vermont, you know, which, you know, they could certainly lose that state from a profits perspective and not collapse, but they knew that the example of even a little place like Vermont treating health care as a right would destroy their business model nationally, and they'll fight like the devil to hold on to that.
One final issue, the Democratic Party. In writing the platform when Bernie and Hillary were at odds, the health system became a huge struggle, and Sanders' forces lost. Single-payer Medicare for all did not appear in the platform. It seems to me that that fight within the party is going to go on through this period and into the 2018 elections and then the 2020 presidential elections. So many of the Democrats, it seems to me, some of them just support the profiteering and others are just afraid of the profiteers, but are not going to want to take a stand. How does that affect the whole struggle?
Well, I think if we rely on a Democratic Party to carry our water on this struggle, Bill, I think we'll constantly be defeated. I think we have to build powerful, issue-based, independent movements around health care justice and force the politicians to come to us. I just don't think that a party like that that relies on Wall Street money and self-funded campaigns, which means billionaires paying for their own political campaigns, is going to, on its own, deliver health care.
The party won't, but the party faithful, a lot of them, are going to move towards universal health care, it seems to me, if we do a good job.
Absolutely. The base of the Democratic Party believes in these issues. And, you know, the sad thing is they often believe that their party is moving towards those issues when, in fact, it's moving in the opposite way. So there needs to be an awakening. You know, I think Bernie has done an amazing job pointing out these contradictions. And, well, you know, politics is really in flux right now. It's in transformation. And it's a desperate time, but it's also a very exciting time to think about what can emerge from these dark days. And I'm very hopeful that we're going to emerge with a much more powerful movement that's going to fight for real working class interests.
Yeah, and in Oregon, too. Don't forget about little old Oregon here on the West Coast. Mark Dudzik, thanks so much for talking to us today.
It's a pleasure, Bill.
Right. So long.